Radio Reverb is Brighton's radio station, entirely run by volunteers and firmly rooted in the city's community.
We are a non-profit organisation. No adverts, no disc jockeys, just real people.
Making radio that Brighton deserves.
Keep safe and get around Brighton and Hove with Streamline 2020. Proud supporter of Radio Reverb.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on a podcast. I'm AD Packham and we are ably supported as ever by oldfootballshirts.com. Well, it's 41 gone and 5 to go in our quest for the championship slash promotion, delete as appropriate, as after last night's win at QPR saw us stretch our lead to 12 points over Huddersfield ahead of their game today. Now, it's been a good week, three wins, but it hasn't been such a great week because we've lost a hero in our quest to get to where we are now. 20 years ago, we lost to Goldston and we also very nearly lost our club. One person was very, very fundamental in helping us save that, and sadly, we lost Paul Welsh this week. Alan.
Awful. We knew he was, you know, he wasn't well. He'd been in hospital. We were understand he was on the mend. He was kind of improving and disimproving, and I'm not 100% sure exactly the whole medical thing, but the, you know, the headline thing is that, like I say, sadly, right on the eve of probably one of the greatest moments in the Albion's history, promotion to the top division, of all things, of all the timings that you could ever have, this is, you know, it's just about, to lose a friend is one thing, to lose a friend just at the moment of maximum glory. Let it be said, let it be known that without Paul Welsh, there wouldn't be the club that we know it today. This was the fella who, and we have to go right back to the beginning of the war years and find out what happened. It was announced. It wasn't even announced. It was leaked that the Goldstone had been sold. And the likes of Paul Welsh, and there was Paul Samra and Paul Brackey, who was the Argus reporter at the time, their first thing was, well, who benefits from the sale of the Goldstone? So they actually went and did all their investigative work. They went to company's house. They went to look at the land registry. They went to see what on earth was going on. And their tenacious investigations got to the bottom of not just who the ground had been sold to, but the whole thing about the no profits clause within the Articles of Association. When you the Articles of Association, those three sort of words that kind of drove the whole war years aspect of realising just how much skullduggery there was, and Paul Welsh was at the forefront of getting to the bottom of that and to finding out exactly what was going on, and then also presenting it to us saying, look, this is what's happening. Being, like I said, as I said before, being no doubt, he was one of those who who started the whole movement, the whole resistance and trying to get the club back. Not only did he do that, he liaised at the time all these times with MPs, with councils,
with David Davis, later
with the whole, and he was part of the team that went to the Centre for Dispute Resolution. He was at such a driving force behind everything, but he went about it in such a methodical, calculating, quiet manner, but there was a lethalness behind
there,
what
there
he was doing.
There was a will of steel behind there,
wasn't there? Lethalness, there was a will of steel, there was a determination, there was a tenacity, I use that word a lot, the tenacity to do what it was necessary to in order to regain, to wrest the control of the club back from those two insert your own asterisk, people who were running the club. Well, they weren't running the club, they were running the club down.
Okay. Well, yeah. We're also joined by Marcus Hancock. Marcus, I mean, he was fundamental in getting us to where we are now, wasn't he?
Absolutely. I've only met him once, which was actually on this show when we did the opening day of the Amex.
Which we have actually just... that is available on podcast again now, by the way. It was Paul's words on that about... his part in it. I was listening to it again yesterday. It was just...
It's compulsive listening. I mean, it really is. And as I say, I was privileged only to meet him the once. But, I mean, we've got a lot to thank him for. It can't be understated, probably, how much we need to thank him. There's Tony Bloom, there's Dick Knight, etc., etc. But at the same time, for an ordinary punter, and I don't mean extraordinary
extraordinary
punter, I should say.
Ordinary fan who became an extraordinary person.
You know, yeah. He is in, you know, he will go down in the annals of history. Of that, there's no doubt.
History has already dictated that we should be grateful, and as we should be, to the likes of Roy Shooter and to Sarah Watts. And there's obviously a whole load of other people. You know, there's Liz Costa, Tim Carter, Paul Samra, Attila, Ian Hart. And like I say, if you take any one of those aspects out of the equation as to what happened, even Richard Vaughan, take any one of those people out of it, we wouldn't have... I won't say we wouldn't have the club, but we wouldn't have the result that we had done, and things would have been that much harder. And with the likes of Paul Welsh, who was, again, at the forefront, but never sought the limelight. You had John, who was pushing himself out there. Paul Samra was always happy to have a camera stuck in his face. Tim Carter, probably less so. And Paul Welsh, never. I mean, it was all we could do. As far as I'm aware, probably when he was on our radio show, and we're talking about the day that the Amex opened, and we're on there first thing in the morning. It was a beautiful day. It was a bit like it is today. It was, you know, we were bouncing a little bit, and then everyone was genuinely excited. But that was probably one of the first times people had heard him talk publicly about all the things that he'd done, and he talked about the immense pride that he felt for doing the work he did. But he didn't do it with his own sense of pride. He did it for everyone.
He didn't do it for himself.
But he saw an injustice, and he felt he could do something about it.
We all saw an injustice. It's just that he knew how to go about doing it and how to right that wrong. And told everyone else about what was happening. And we're not talking about sort of the whole fake news scenario. He told it in a calm, measured, and what's more, not just told people about it, organised and petitioned. And, you know, the march through London from Victoria to Park Lane, that was down to him. He was instrumental in Fans United. I mean, there were several people involved in that. He was involved in getting, you know, the CEDR and petitioning that. I think he was one of those who presented the petition to Downing Street about Falmer. Absolutely everything. We have so much to be thankful to Paul Welsh for.
It doesn't seem fair that he's not going to be there to see the end of this journey. Let's talk about this, because it is a journey we're on. You know, from 20 years ago to where we are now, sitting top of the table, on our way.
Ups and downs along the way. But the point is that the likes of him, none of us actually gave up, but the likes of him made sure we never gave up. They knew that the argument was right. They knew that we were on the right side of the argument. And, you know, he was the one who was able to keep us going. Very much, you know, a reluctant hero, but a hero nonetheless.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that was Paul Welsh, who sadly died this week.
It's a terrible it's awful, and yeah, we are going to miss him. It's not only just that, it's also, you know, it just visions of, you know, those sort of rosy red cheeks in the evening star, always with a carrier bag, pint in his hand. It's, you know, if you wanted a statue of anyone, there it is.
Even Dr.
You know, you don't even need to sort of, like, you know, to do the hair or anything like that, because, you know, sorry mate, same hairstyle as yours, frankly. But, you know, the carrier bag, the pint, and the sort of constant perplexed look on his face of a man who feared he'd left the gas on at home. He just had but you could tell the love and the affection that you have for Brighton Hove Albion and his fellow supporters. It came across calmly, but with, like you say, a steely determination. Paul, you will be missed. Thank you very much for all you did for us.
Absolutely. Okay, well, moving on, and it has been on the pitch. It's been a fantastic week. Three straight wins. Firstly, against
Can we go and
Black
get drunk now then, please?
Yeah, let's go. Thanks, bye. Yeah, firstly against Blackburn, Birmingham, and then finally last night against QPR.
Yeah.
It's looking like this is going to happen, isn't it? Now, I don't want to put the mockers on it, but
you just have, yeah. Well, let's go back to the Blackburn game last week, and on paper, yes, we don't play on paper, but on paper, you think, well, this is probably the easiest of the three,
undoubtedly,
and yet I think this is one they make the hardest work of. It just wasn't happening. I mean, they didn't exactly.
It's strange though, because I had a different viewpoint from usual, because I was there with Molly, so we were over in the family stand.
She only saw one pineapple, didn't she?
She only saw one pineapple. Yeah, but no, she was quite happy. But it was a game where you just felt that nothing actually happened, and it was a game where people's frustrations were beginning to boil over. And yet, I was watching the highlights. We actually had a lot of. I actually remember.
All I was going to say is that, and this is kind of indicative of how people view the season, you know, this whole thing of we win so many games without playing that great, especially when you view it in comparison to the second half of last season, where we were, you know, there was a couple of games where we were banging in the fours and the fives and what have you, and looking like we were playing really well, and yet this season, oh, we're not playing so well. I'm not so sure that's the case. I think it's more to do with the fact there's a level of expectation, and an expectation itself of... for each pass to be beautiful and crisp and perfect and what have you, and for the chances to be created and for us to bang in the four and fives. The fact is you can't win that sort of thing every week. But when the point you're making is that when you see the highlights and how many chances you had, and you kind of forget them, you think, actually, it wasn't that bad at all. Yeah. It's just that the expectation...
It's spread out over 90 minutes.
Well, still their keeper, he had to make a lot of saves.
He had a good game, but what I was saying is that there was a lower expectation last season because the previous season we just avoided a relegation, so there was a lower expectation. So the quality of football we saw was actually above... you know, what we were used to.
Okay, well, the team news on this one was...
Marcus, incidentally, is just nodding. For those of you who aren't watching this on Super Reverb Vision, Marcus was nodding there. Okay?
There's people in the market.
Someone actually agrees with Al, which is very rare in this day.
Rare, yeah.
It is, blimey.
Yeah. When you nod, can I just say for the tape, can you say yes?
It's 12, well, I could do.
It's 12 minutes past 12 on Saturday the 8th of April, yes, and someone finally agreed with Alan.
Yes.
Blimey.
You'll get used to it, don't worry.
The team news was there was still no Bruno. Poco came back. Baldock was injured. So there was a first start for Tuba Akpom. Now, he didn't pull up any trees, but there's no excuse for people booing one of our own players when he came off, was there?
Marcus?
You don't boo your own players.
I can see why people may have done so. I know there's been threads about it and various discussions on social media. Ultimately, you're right, but if I'm being fair by saying that actually, you know, mate, seriously, I don't think he broke a sweat in that entire game. Now, maybe he was a fish out of water, but you know, let's be honest, we're Brighton over Albion. We have seen some real rubbish players, if that's fair to say, on loan or otherwise.
Who was your worst player you think you've ever seen pull on the stripes, Martin?
It's plenty from the Gillingham days.
Ashley
Neal. Exactly, yeah, I'm thinking of 22. Yeah. So, but in recent years, let's say Amex era, Leon Best is probably one of them, I would say.
You could not find a more inappropriately named footballer than
him. Absolutely.
What, Leon?
Even I think Liam ran a couple of times and even broke a sweat maybe once.
He
maybe
shouted at the referee, didn't he?
And I think he did shout at the referee once, and he sort of looked like he cared. But now, whether Akpom inexperience but he didn't put, from what I saw, he didn't put any effort in and didn't look bothered. And you've got 10 other players who are breaking their necks in getting to where he just looked like he was.
He was part of Hull's promotion team last season,
so.
He was dipping in and out of that side as well. So I mean,
I'm curious as to what Arsenal see in him.
That's the thing. But I think Vicky nailed it, didn't she? Say that the guy who sort of like scouts for Arsenal youth, he just sort of, you know, because they hardly ever make the first team anyway. It's probably the easiest job in the world.
Give you a girl, yeah.
He can just throw 20 grand a year at you or 20 grand a week at you, and just loan you
20
out
grand
to
a year.
Play.
No,
conversely, the other fella from Chelsea, but I'm sure we'll come to him
sure.
in a bit. But yeah, tomorrow, you're right. There's no excuse for the booing. However, I can see why. Because, mate, seriously, you didn't put any effort in. From what I could see,
the only time I think that it's appropriate to boo a player is when you can see they're openly, actively cheating the club, as in they're specifically downing tools and just strolling around like they don't care. I think in this instance, I think it's just the bloke is just rubbish. It certainly was that
but,
day.
You know, he's you had John O'Beaker, who was rubbish, but let's be honest, at least he tried.
No, and he scored.
Well, yes.
He scored and had a brilliant goal celebration.
If, I don't remember.
I'm going to take your word for it.
It was in the FA Cup at Port Vale.
He
just stopped and saluted.
Was that for the Brighton? That wasn't for Brighton.
For those of you not watching on Super Reverb Vision, AD's salute was actually something to behold. No, it's...
I was waving at someone in the market.
The thing is, when he's come on as a sub, he's actually been there to sort of run around and close the game out. And in that sense, he has run around, albeit only for 20 minutes. It's like he didn't know what he was doing. He also showed you just how much work Sam Baldock does put in.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Glenn Murray had to do the running around for him and Akpom on 90 or 95 minutes. Yeah. I mean, you thought the bloke was going to throw up on the pitch and he just run himself sick into
and
the ground.
And Knockhart a couple of times was having a go at Akpom where he sort of showing him where he should have been running or et cetera, et cetera. And I think Liam also, not grabbed him by the scruff of the neck, but at one point was like, and I'm very surprised that he actually came out for the second half, if I'm being honest. I really was.
Well, I'd say the other thing about booing is that it might be the case in the last five games. I mean, the fact that we've actually got the 9 points, we've actually sort of done, you know, the hard, hopefully, I think we've done the hard part. But there could come a time between now and the end of the season where Akpom is going to need to come on to possibly rescue a game, is he going to be able to do it? You don't know, but he's certainly going to lessen his chances or lessen his desire to do so, knowing full well that he is actually, you know, being booed the previous match.
I mean, when you look at loan players that we've had, like Akpom, and we had James Wilson last year, of course. Now
He blew hot and cold,
but, you know, he scored some very, very important goals.
He did score a winner against
Reading, people throwing up on the pitch,
And I think it was just a bit... I mean, James Wilson, on the other hand, was probably just a bit lightweight, shall we say. When you could see he was involved, and it was interesting. I know we're jumping ahead again, but when you saw Akpom warming up against Birmingham, he looked a very sort of isolated figure as well, even as half-time.
So you don't think he's integrated into the squad?
It could be. I don't know. I mean, you know, there's stories of him turning up in his bling Rolls Royce, you know, and he still hasn't made it as a footballer, and, you know, you've got all the other professionals at Brighton Hove Albion who've been there, done it. And
hooray for the outraged.
I don't know, but it's just something's not right with him, to be fair as well, I think.
Well, one player that has been fully integrated into the squad and... it was largely forgotten about for quite a while because he has been out of the team injured and been fourth choice. But Uwe Hunemeyer has actually come on in leaps and bounds, and he's been fantastic.
How did he
for us.
Not get player of the match, man of the match that day? I think he got it on Tuesday for more of a sympathy vote because he was Tuesday, but he did make a couple of whoopsies on the Tuesday. But he was absolutely enormous.
I
say absolutely enormous, he's not enormous in the Shane Duffy mould. I mean, he's not a towering centre half that's going to sort of, you know, look as though he's about to tread on your lunchbox. He is. He is not. I mean, people call him the BFG, but I'm not sure that B stands for big. So, his role, and like you say, he had been out for a long time. He was fourth, fifth choice, whatever it is, and it was his performance was damn near faultless.
But it's very much a case of, and it does set down a marker as well. It's like of making advantage of getting that opportunity.
Absolutely.
It's going to be difficult for Duffy to get forced. Well,
If Duffy's ready, he'll be back in the team.
Do you think
so? Yeah.
I suppose with Dunk not being very well at the moment, that's a shoe in, isn't
but
it?
You've also got the fact that, I mean, Hunemeyer is actually a better footballer than Duffy.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, the likes of Duffy would have been, you know, much better suited to play against. I mean, we're leaping around with our games here, but it'd have been much better suited to play against QPR, against their man Mountain. You know, we'd have actually possibly done a better job. But
And Chris Wood against Leeds as well.
That kind of thing. He's a best. Certainly, you know, he's an intelligent player. He's a good ball player. He's won promotions at this level before. You know, coming out of the whatever the second division of the Bundesliga is called, the Bundesliga 2, I think it was Bundesliga 2 or something. He's been here, seen it, done it, got the T-shirt thrown up on the pitch for it, and he knows what it's about. So for him to, as Chris Hughton has said several times, the way he trains is effectively he's match ready the whole time.
Yeah, and he has to be good. Okay, well, let's just talk about the goal then, because before we move on, and everyone was looking nervously at the linesman, weren't they?
Yeah,
yeah, the linesman whose flag was going up like a toaster every 2 seconds. It was Yeah, Christ knows what planet they were on. But yeah, no, it was perfectly done. Even Glenn Murray turned around a couple of times and had a look. But, you know, he wasn't offside. Goal's a goal. Mm.
Yeah,
fine.
So when the ball was played into Murray, who allows Stevens to pass out to Poco, who crosses. The cross is headed on by Knockhart to an onside Glenn Murray, who finishes for what was the only goal of the game.
And how many people thought it was actually Hemed that knocked that on originally?
I did as well, actually. Yeah. You're right. I didn't realise it at first.
It was Knockhart. Hang on, you're only six. You're only 2'3", mate. You know, exactly. Don't get enough for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And another thing, I'm going to say,
tricky feet from Glenn as well, because he sort of caught it with one and then tucked it in with the other or whatever you want to say.
Should I say something really, really nerdy and stupid now?
Go on.
Yeah, there's no such thing as onside. You're either offside or you're not offside. In the rules, there is no such thing as onside. It's true. Sorry, right, carry on.
So we win, we did, and but that wasn't the last cheer of the game after
that
goal.
That was...
So I mean, I'll tell my version of it, and you tell me yours. I obviously, like I mentioned earlier, we were in the family stand, and I was just wandering around to meet you lot around in the.
You needed a beer, didn't you?
In the West Lower afterwards. And all of a sudden, I hear this roar go up. I'm like,
what, us?
Yeah, well,
okay.
But yeah, basically, normally people can hear you before they see you. Well, that is the point.
Am I paying for this abuse? Or was it free today?
It is free. It is free. And besides, there's a load of Morris dancers outside. I know you've got an irrational fear of them.
Tell your story about the...
Yeah, so I hadn't... Because I was with Molly, I wasn't really keeping up with what the others was going on in the other games. And I just heard this roar go, what's all that about? And I thought it was... New. And then we found out that Huddersfield hadn't won, and the other Albion, Burton, had actually got a late winner. And I was like, wow!
Well, I would say normally you'd actually pile straight from your seat into the concourse to lower your beer down your neck. Does it touch either side, Marcus, do you reckon?
The first one certainly doesn't, that's fair to
you
say.
Might as well so just throw it on the floor.
Cooking lager and slam that down before you move on to your expensive ale.
Or just a bucket of Sprite crisp and dry or something. So, yes, we were still in our seats, and the chubby chaps, the chubbier chaps in front of me, the ones who need to bend light round because they're the only ones in the West Stand up that stand up all the time, they started jumping around and falling on each other. Because I just looked at the thing and said, you know, I think it was Steve Bailey's thing, said still 0-0 at full time here or 90 minutes. And then you heard this. You know, the thing is, in the stands themselves, there's obviously a few people left. There's probably a few hundred, but there's a few people left, and you hear the cheer there. But you can actually hear the cheer from the concourse, from the stands themselves. And you think, someone scored. Burton, it must be. It can only be the Burton score. And you look it up, 96 minutes. Thanks very much. Jackson Irvine?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I was in West Lower after the game, sort of decamp from West Upper straight into West Lower. And at first, I thought that cheer was because Chelsea had equalised against Palace.
Christ.
Because Chelsea were playing Palace at the same, and the game was just in a conclusion. Mm. So you go running over, and then you realise that actually it's like Huddersfield 0, and on the old ticker, Burton Albion 1, 90 plus 6. Let's make that quite clear. 90 plus 6. And it is.
It just makes it all the more delicious, doesn't it?
It makes it all the more delicious. And I think that's probably why we were tense against Blackburn, because we knew Huddersfield were kicking off after us. So the games weren't running side by side, or it was a case of, right, Huddersfield have already won, so we have to... It was this sort of, you know...
I'm not sure the players were necessary.
I mean, it's us fans, isn't it? The players are going about their business in their usual professional way. It's us fans who are going, oh, you know...
We'd have taken the draw, to be honest.
Yeah, exactly.
We'd have taken the draw.
But, I mean, that was something that has given us a little bit more breathing space, hasn't it? Them dropping those
Jackson
points.
Jackson Irvine, player of the season. Sorry, Brighton players, but, you know...
brilliant. Yeah, absolutely.
That could be a defining moment.
And I would say it's probably as big a cheer as the one that when the final whistle went.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Absolutely.
I mean, and to be honest, actually, Saturday night, there was a little bit of mini party started.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I am here with Alan Wares and Marcus Hancock, and we are, as ever, sponsored by oldfootballshirts.com. And Phil has given me a shirt of the week, and I'm just passing that over to Marcus, and he can describe
Dennis
his thing
the Menace
for us.
Yes, it is a classic Nike Dennis the Menace type, so it's
red and black hoops, isn't it?
Red and black hoops, thin red and black hoops,
yes.
With a With a badge that looks like a W, is it?
Well, actually, in this instance, he hasn't photoshopped out the badge, and I can see it says Western Sydney Wanderers.
It does say Western Sydney Wanderers.
Bad photoshopping, Phil.
Yeah.
He tried
to black out the other one, though, or blew it out, I should say.
Yes. He's photoshopped out the kit manufacturer. I know he's big on his kit manufacturers, but... what's Uncle Phil told us this week?
He said, well, here is my shirt of the week, and this is the home shirt from 2015 to 2016 of Australian A-League side Western Sydney Wanderers.
Yes, got it right.
As you can see, it's a night number made in Thailand, just like our kits. Possibly made in the same factory, he asks. However, note the sponsor's logos and the square on the front. It's not a stick-on patch, but printed on the shirt.
Is it?
As are the two sponsor's logos on the sleeves. And this isn't a template shirt. It's a custom-made for the Western Sydney Wanderers.
So Phil's making a point.
Are we really? he's having a whinge.
Don't blame him, because I hate iron-on patches myself.
Are we really lower down the pecking order than a team in the A-League, he says.
Mr. Barber.
Anyway, rant over, he says.
No, Marcus hasn't finished.
Here's all you need to know about the Wanderers. They were formed in 2012, and they are the youngest side in the A-League, and they play their home games this season at both the 23,000 capacity Sydney Showground Stadium and for the sellout Sydney Derbies against Sydney FC at the 83,000 capacity Stadium Australia.
Wow.
Currently, the local council are building a purpose-built boutique stadium to be shared with the Parramatta Eels Rugby League Club.
A boutique.
Australian football squads are limited to 26 players, with only five of them non-Australian. And three players must be under 20 years of age. There's a salary cap of 2.6 million per season, with a minimum salary being 56k. This is Australian dollars, of course. Mm. Thus ensuring no one is paid an extortionate salary at the expense of junior players. Each club is allowed two marquee players whose salary can exceed the cap, and the players who stay with the club beyond the five seasons have a loyalty allowance applied to their salary. What this means is that the A-League controls the sport, keeps it in check, and the clubs don't go bust or run at a loss. And they have at least four league games a season with crowds in excess of 80,000. He'll look forward to a Wanderers game when he visits Eastern Australia in October. He says, I wonder what Albion games I'll be missing. Thank you, Phil.
Mm.
Yeah, so basically,
Palace,
yeah,
home.
Palace, yeah.
I mean, I can see
Palace away, hopefully. So yeah. Yeah. Like, well, yeah.
But I can see where he's getting at there, and I completely agree with what they're doing.
It's kind of very restricted in terms of business practice and a squad retention. So it's kind of interesting. But whilst I think that's certainly the right way to go. Mm. Not necessarily, because I mean the business models for running football are just appalling, and everyone runs at a horrific loss. Here we are, top of the championship, and we're still losing squillions of pounds every day, every year, probably every day.
Well, I don't think when Jimmy Hill got the wage cap abolished that this is how he thought it was going
to
end up.
Well, to be honest, that only really kicked in sort of once Sky, you know, threw their squillions at the game, and it was the agents and the players who basically yummed it up. I mean, the clubs took a few quid to rebuild their stadiums, but above and beyond that, it was the players, and well, the salaries are just We've moaned about it for years and years and years and years, and like I say, the business model just means it's never going to change until such time as the bubble bursts.
Yeah,
and a lot of people are going to lose their jobs, and a lot of people are going to go crash bang wallop. So, you know, the what they've done is it's that thing of, you know, if you're holding onto the balloon, at what point do you let go, or do you just keep going and going and going? So, very scary. But what they've done there in Australia is actually just try and keep everything sustainable.
I think it's run on a similar way to American football teams.
There did seem to be a kind of a parallel there. I think theirs is more to do with squad retention, because they have their player pool thing that, you know, a given set of players will go into, and certain the teams that finish bottom get first dibs and that kind of thing. It doesn't sound quite like that way, but if they're saying there's a £2.6 million wage cap for a 26 player squad, that's an average of 100 grand a year. And so, but you say some will be on low as 50 grand, which means a few will be on above, you know, 150. Yeah. But that's still 3,000, that's $3,000 a week, which is actually about 1,500 quid. So none of them are on a king's ransom. And like I say, if they're playing at a stadium that's 23,000, with the occasional 80,000. Mm. But you get to realise that, you know, 23,000, and I don't suppose they're paying, the fans are being asked to pay silly money either.
No, absolutely.
So there isn't the same money sloshing around, but what there is actually more evenly distributed to make it, you know,
I think it's
much more of a level playing field.
Yeah, and that's how it should be everywhere, to be honest. But
we're
moving on. Yeah. Okay, Notice Board out. We're still in REMP season. We had the quiz. How did that go?
We had a blast. Go on, Marcus. World's least magnanimous winner since.
Last time you did this.
No, we had the Robert E. Memorial Fund quiz at the stadium the night before the Blackburn game. It was a great time. 170 people came along, 35 teams, raised exactly £3,000 for the Robert E. Memorial Fund. Lovely time was had by all, especially, I think, the chap to my right who's going to tell us how he did.
Well, it's fair to say I'm going to blow my own trumpet here, but a double REMF quiz winner now, along with a certain Miss Vicky Lank,
yes,
and a certain Mr. Bass,
yes. But
the team
is my team, which they managed
it's
to
not
do
your
with
no, no, no,
they,
no,
they
no,
did
no,
it without
no,
me.
No, it's not AD's team. Yeah. It was originally put together by myself, and I had to put a new team together because obviously Matthew's in Madrid,
yes,
and then Kenya before that.
Anyway, thank you very much indeed for everyone who came along. I'm sure you had all had a lovely time. I'm sorry, Mr. AD, but you did. Your team won in your absence. So,
yes, they did.
Good luck, incidentally, to everyone. If you listen to the podcast after the weekend, you're too late. But good luck to everyone who's running for the Robert E. Memorial Fund in the marathon this weekend. I think it's going to be a bit of a scorchio, sticky one. So do be careful. As if I'm actually going to lecture anyone about how to run a marathon. But good luck to everyone. And thank you to everyone who's taken part. We've obviously got the match, the challenge match on the 5th of May. I believe that the Brighton squad has been announced and does indeed include stalwarts Ricky Marlowe.
Yep.
God, I nearly forgot. Paul Rogers. It would be nice for someone like Steve Sidwell to play, or maybe Glenn Murray, but you know. Actually, just give
Robert.
It.
Gary Hart, even.
Yes, yeah, or Bobby or anyone like that, yes, but
as usual, our ring is the same.
They're 100 years old, yeah. I mean, I think collectively.
And they're going to play Andy Johnson for the full 90 minutes.
Yeah,
again,
that kind
they?
Of thing, yes, and win a couple of penalties. Who knew? so, yes, Friday the 5th of May at the Dripping Pan, Lewis, £5 entry, £2 for under 16s, free if accompanied by an adult. The bar will be open, which is just as well, because you don't want to be compelled to watch that when you're sober. But the whole idea is not how the game goes, but it's actually about beating Pat. No, it's not. It's about raising money. So so if anyone wants to come along. And on the Friday the 16th of June is the REMF Golf Day. It's going to be held at the East Sussex. No, it's not the East Sussex. It's at the Mid Sussex Golf Course. If you want details, email Mike Langridge. That's m.langridge@virgin.net. And he'll give you all the details.
Now, Alan, I went on to the Comedia website this week just to see how sales for our
sold
show
out.
There. There was a great big sold out sign there. So
yeah, it's nice, isn't it? Excellent. So we're not going to plug that. No point in plugging it.
So, I mean, if there is a black market,
I think there will be a few tickets released sort of close to the time. We were actually just, in sorting out the show, we're getting to realise what would the space we need within the room itself. Mm. So a few tickets probably will be released, probably another 20 or so will be released in the fullness of time, and we'll let you know when that's going to be. But apart from that, sorry, if you wanted the tickets, if you want a party of 30, forget it, you're too late. But yes, it's going to be good fun, and once we worked out what on earth it is we're doing, but commemorating 20 years since the last game at the Goldstone.
Okay, so I've got some stats here. Did you know that Glenn Murray has scored 18 goals at home this year?
Yep.
That's 6 goals more than Wigan have scored all season.
You've been, Twitter, haven't you?
It's crazy, isn't it?
Yes.
Did you know that Glenn Murray is the first Brighton player to score 20 league goals in the season since 2010, when himself scored 22.
Well, he's also the first one to score 20 goals in a season twice since Bobby Zamora.
Yeah.
Legend.
We've set a new club record as well of
26 wins.
26 league wins, which is a second tier record.
Second tier record. Yeah. I mean, we've got more than that. I mean, we're on course for club records.
Which kind of broke last season's record, didn't it? Is that the one that's... We broke it last year and then we've broken it again. Sort of thing.
And Glenn Murray scored 33 goals in his last 42 home appearances for Brighton.
Really?
Really? Wow.
That's good going.
That's 18 in 20 in this... Well, this is 2016.
Glenn, if you're listening,
and 15 in 22 in 2010-11.
Glenn, if you're listening, please bring back the hand to the forehead salute just once for when you score a goal for us old school.
Oh, that is so third division.
I know,
really
I love it. It's still how we say hello
did
to each other.
Did we get to the bottom of what it's about? Was he
no, because he did do it while he played for Palace. So it wasn't a Brighton thing where people saying, oh, he's receding. I mean, maybe the receding hairline one was one story. The other one was about a 5-year contract. Well, obviously, no, because he did it at Palace. So. Anyway. Okay.
Well, Birmingham then. Bruno was back, and as was Bong, and there were starts for Solly March and Tom Ahmed in the continued absence of Sam Baldock. And there was a minute on the clock when we
was a brilliant break.
Got our noses in front with a brilliant team.
I think it was indicative of the fact that we'd actually started March instead of Scalak, who. Well, the fact is that it was just that little breakaway, that little 10-yard breakaway that he did in his own area that actually freed up the rest of the team for the rest of the breakaway. Mm. I mean, I can't remember who it was. All I can remember is the ball being hoofed up to...
March brings it out of the fence and lays off to Murray. The ball is picked up by Kyle, who quarterbacks the ball into space for knock-up. Bruno overlaps and he finds Murray, who pulls the trigger, and it's goal pie all over your face.
Yes.
Brilliant. No, the point is that the execution, sorry, was absolutely superb. It was a brilliant goal. And let's face it, even MGF Charlie was up before Murray had kicked the ball into the net.
And you know what? Absolutely right. I took my daughter's boyfriend to that game. So he's been to about three. Even though he's an Arsenal fan in inverted commas, but he's been to 4 Albion games now, and he's seen us win 3 times, and he went to 1 last season. So I'm slowly converting him to the good ship. And he's moving down to Brighton, and he's talked about getting a membership so he can buy tickets, because sometimes
good
his
man,
job will be a Saturday job. So anyway, blah, 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 blah. But point being, what a great goal. And fair play to Houghton. That side that he picked was one that said, right, I'm going for this from the off.
Yes.
First, you know, none of this picking Scalak or, you know, a bit like Blackburn.
Let's see how we go.
Laboured, yeah, let's give it a go after 20 minutes, see what happens. This was like, right, I'm going to, you know, go for the early goal. And
well, I like to think Zola looked at the team sheet and went,
probably thought, oh,
bugger.
Yeah, and bearing in mind, that was probably the best team he could pick with the players that he had.
With the exception of Baldock.
Yes, because Baldock's injured. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's the team that he had available. Because, you know, I thought, oh, please don't start Akpom again, kind of thing. Yada, yada, yada. Let's, you know.
But that was 20, I mean, we just mentioned it there, 20 for the season for Murray. That's good going.
Not bad. About time. Well, you think of possibly makes up for how many he missed when he was in the third division. I mean, he ended up with 22 that season, but he really could have had 40 that season.
If he'd actually scored the penalties that he was taking.
That kind of thing, yeah.
But, I mean, we had to be on our toes. Birmingham were never really out of the game at that point, and they did hit the bar with a good Gardner.
That was a great free kick.
That was superbly done. But
yeah, good Gardner, I like that, yeah. Wasn't the other one, was it?
Yeah, not the rubbish one that we had, yeah. The one
another rubbish player on loan, but again he scored for us.
Yes, he did.
Gets Wigan a valuable 3 points at that time.
Exactly. Well, it's funny you should say that, because I was talking to Andy during the game just after we'd scored the early goal, and I said, I hope this isn't like the one that Gardner got for us when we're hanging on for 90 minutes now, because that was in the first minute as well.
We're a little bit better than that, but you felt it was almost the if we hadn't scored that first minute, there'd been an air of, well, certainly from the fans, there'd been an air of concentration, an air of you know, tension, that actually think, well, it is still 0-0, but you know, it's almost right, it's 1-0, do we go for stick or twist here?
Yeah.
You know, they right, we got our goal, and what do we do now, kind of thing.
But I mean, that goal was almost a trademark Brighton goal this season.
Oh, the breakaway,
I mean,
yeah.
It's when we play with pace and like that, we normally do put the ball in the back of the net,
yeah,
but we're just not doing very often.
Yeah, I think actually you could probably have a DVD of Brighton's best breakaway goals. Because I mean,
rewind to last season. I mean, again, it was like, you know, the ball's out of the box to Knockhart, and with Zamora at the other end of it.
I was about to say, I think Knockhart is the central sort of pillar in
Knockhart
all of
and Bruno.
Get the ball out to wide to Knockhart in a certain amount of space. You think, I fear for the opposition here.
Yeah.
But I mean, it is that. I mean, we talked about this on the show before. But you know, you've got, when you have those little partnerships all over the pitch. Mm-hmm. I mean, and you know, it's usually better for us when we've got Stevens and Kyle in tandem, as it is when we've got Knockhart and Bruno together.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, again, I know we've already covered the game, but like the Leeds game, it was a bit disjointed because there was no Bruno and
all
there was
quiet.
Blah blah blah. Anyway,
yeah.
But shortly after that, we did lose Lewis Dunk,
yes,
who was a bit poor.
He looked like he was, I don't know what's up with him, with the cactus pants, or if he was throwing up, or what. I mean, he'd just gone on a hurtling run up the wing, and then thought. They think, come on, you lot, and then just hoofs the ball into the middle like a you know, quarterbacks it straight to no one in particular.
Well, he was diving around the box and putting his body on the line for a few blocks as well prior to that as well.
Well, it's just one of those things. But I think, you know, this is where we actually do want to talk about it. I'll let you do this, Marcus, because, you know, you've got to sort of give credit to Tomori.
Brilliant. Conversely, Akpom, Tomori, well, you know, what a player. What a great...
The potential he's got,
You know, he is going to go far. And it's just... But you can see it just from the attitude. And I know, you know, in the times he's played before, it's not been his fault. He came on at left-back against Newcastle. That's not his position. Played right-back against Leeds. Did all right in those two games.
Absolutely.
Typical centre-half.
He didn't go past the
halfway line type thing, you know, when he was playing at full-back, because Brighton's way of playing is, you know, you push on and overlap and all that. However, centre-half, I mean, what brilliant.
I just hope people don't judge him by the Lincoln City own goal and the Leeds sort of rush of blood to the head.
I think they won't now, because what an excellent game he had.
I think even he must be surprised, though, about the amount of game time he's actually had.
Well, someone actually, if you read North Stand chat, I'm not sure who he is, but there's a chap who posts on there called Exile Seagull, who always writes an excellent, excellent match report. And he made the point of, was it him or was it Jason? Okay, one of them. I wrote a blog, but either way, both blogs are excellent. They worked out that Hunamaya and Tomori was the 10th choice centre-back pairing. Don't sit and think about it now. I sat and worked it out, and they were absolutely right. It's the 10th choice.
Wow.
And yet, they look perfectly comfortable.
Yeah. I mean, I hope if we go up and Chelsea don't want him, then he would be an excellent addition to the squad. The only trouble is, of course, he's got to get ahead of Dunk and Hunamaya and...
I don't see why we couldn't get him on another season-long loan.
What an asset he would be, because he's brilliant. I can't fault him. He's great.
And he has grown with every performance as well, hasn't he?
Absolutely.
I just hope that, you know, it's one of those, it's, you know, Connor Galton, one of his first games.
Connor Galton, of course, there's another set of Connor Galton,
you know, who understand his operation went well, and he's going to be back in pre-season training. You think, well, blimey, from the news that, you know, they've identified a heart problem, so he's going to be back in training during the closed season. You think, well, brilliant for the medical team that have actually
I understand he's got a very impressive scar as well.
Thanks for that, mate.
but that had to cut him right out.
Not now.
Okay, well, let's move on. March went down in the penalty box wanting a penalty, but he wasn't.
No, just well tackled.
Let's put it this way, he didn't
slip/dive.
No.
Okay, second half we got off to a flyer. Stockdale punts a long kick forward to Knockhart and to Chase. He gets to the byline, but has to pass back to Bruno, who crosses for Murray to head across goal for Hemed to nipple home.
He said he scores with his heart.
No. He got abreast of it.
Just forget it. No. Sorry, I was trying to work out what part, because it just seemed like full past him. From our thing up in the gods and the West Stand upper, did he head it? Did it hit him?
It definitely hit him in the mid rift.
Yeah, for those
area,
not watching on Super Reverb Vision,
yes,
Marcus is playing with his torso.
Yes, that sort of area.
Yeah. So yeah, no, it all counts, and you know, and as we've worked out, he extends his lead as the all-time leading scorer in the Amex era.
The question I got right, and Mark.
Have I just opened up a can of worms?
But we still won anyway.
Yeah. For reference, what it was I asked a question at the Renf quiz, who is the all-time leading scorer in the Amex era for the club? And the answer is Tom Ahmed. He'd actually overtaken Ashley Barnes at the Ipswich game a few weeks ago. But I think you said Tom Ahmed, and the rest argued Ashley Barnes, yes?
Well, kind of, yes.
Right.
Okay, Knockhart's back heel. I've got written down.
Yeah, yeah. Someone said he turned around and had a look, but there are times when he does that, and you think, oh, great, you've just given it to their left back. Well done, mate.
But it was from that attack that we got the third goal.
When it comes off, it's brilliant. When it doesn't, you just think, I'm going to smash him into the ground myself, mate.
But he did get brought down for a free kick, and the free kick was swung in, and... Tomori makes a bit of a hash of it, and the ball pinballs around a bit, and Uwe Hunemeyer fires home for a goal that makes us all feel just a little bit fluffy.
That 50p header, wasn't it, really?
It went anywhere. He just completely mistimed it, but I think it completely threw their defence. But what I found funny about that was Hunemeyer is clearly a player not used to scoring a goal. Rewind, I use that word again, rewind. Do you remember the one and only goal that Marcus Painter scored?
Yes, I do.
Whoever it was, at with Dean.
It was
a bullet header from 25 inches.
I can't remember.
But the first thing he did was turn around to look at the linesman, realised there was no flag, and then sort of ran away and did this running, punching in the air thing. And you think, you haven't actually practised this. Similar with Hunemeyer, who was running away and he did that sort of running, punching the air thing. You think, you're not used to he didn't go to the crowd. He just sort of ran away going, whatever it is in German, oh my God, I've scored. You know,
what happens next, I watched that and every time I see it, it just really makes me smile. I was just so happy for him.
Yeah, absolutely.
So am I, because he's been brilliant. So,
he is. Yeah. Well, he ended up with the sponsor's Man of the Match award.
Rightly so.
But I think, well...
Yeah, like you say,
I think certainly more for the Blackburn game. But the fact is, he then weighed in with a goal. Yeah, no, it was a good week for him.
Well, he could have scored twice as well.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Well, yeah, actually, I think first part... Was it that game or the Blackburn? I can't remember which one it was. They had both had chances. Well, him and Dunk both had chances. Okay. You know, even Dunk did a Cruyff turn in the box, you know, so to get his shot away. So yeah, no, it certainly did brilliantly. Yes.
Okay, so I mean, it was another Brum did pull one back, of course, and it was a good goal.
It was a good goal. Yeah, you know, fair play to him.
But yes, you know, there was a nice bit of.
Okay.
No.
Well, let's move on then, because there was another game this week. There's three games in the week.
Thick and fast, aren't
they?
They're
coming thick and fast. And of course, we were away at QPR. There were changes again. No Kaya or Bong, so Sidwell came in, as did Poco. Still no Bulldog. And I just forgot a note here that Grant Hall and Joel Lynch were starting for QPR as well.
Yeah, I know. They're still playing for Brighton, evidently.
Ex-Albion players. We've come up against Elliot Bennett, haven't we? Craig Conroy, or whatever his name was as well. Blackburn.
As I understand it, the Kyle and Bong were just rested. So squad rotation, not necessarily... Well, and I think also, I think that the
where was Rossini? Because he wasn't even in the squad.
No, and he wasn't for
that's
the Birmingham Baron. For the Birmingham game, we had one defender on the bench and he came on. So I thought, well, if anything else happens, we're in the doo-doo here, because that was it. At least Verin was on the bench against QPR this time. So
Third,
whatever his name is. But
the Norwegian fella.
Yes. It's a bit worrying that, you know, there we are losing Duffy and eventually 6 weeks later this new fella that comes in is finally considered ready to sit on the bench.
I think he likes alcohol.
rubbing alcohol, and elk blood.
I also think that actually, for as choices go, you know, bearing in mind I think the robustness of QPR's midfield, I actually think that choosing Sidwell ahead of Kyle, I think, was the right choice. Sidwell had a good game, I thought. Him and Stevens worked well, although in watching the game there was a lot of stuff where they did the really hard part. They did the really the tough part really well. But then when it came to sort of simple passes, that's again where, you know, something's under hit. Or, I mean, there was one time, although he's going to get the plaudits, but there was one in the first half. Poco had the ball out wide. So much time, so much space to cross it. Trundles it to his first man, and that you think, oh, for crying out loud, what on earth was that? Did you practice that?
I mean, I've got that. I mean, there was a lot of loose passing early doors, and we did well. It was the 12th minute where we started to get a little bit of momentum going in the game. And
we were doing was we were closing down their midfield very quickly. We were actually hassling them off the ball to the point that QPR actually ended up making a lot of mistakes. For all the half-time punditry saying, oh, you know, QPR are doing well and they're going to be delighted with the way they're playing, actually their midfield was being, you know, severely tested, and we had this allowed us an awful lot of the ball. Reading people's tweets of those who were at the game versus those who were watching on telly, there seemed to be two considerations of what the games were. Those at the game were thinking, God, we weren't that great. Those were watching on the telly thinking, actually, it wasn't too bad.
Mm.
What did you make of the first half?
I thought we were. I had no problem with it. I thought it was. It was a good solid. It was a solid first half. I think it's fair to say. Yeah. It was, you know, there was a half chance. I can't remember that Hemed. There was a shot in the first half, wasn't there? That Hemed should have done better with. And it was a shot that Hemed had that sort of didn't. I think marched past it and Hemed sort of fell over across and two offsides, of course.
Well, let's talk about those offsides then, because one of them was marginal. One of them was definitely not marginal, which was the first one.
To be given.
I think with the benefit of replays, they were both offside. Yes.
They were trying to do, and they were trying to play this high line, weren't they? And try and catch us offside.
I couldn't help feeling, though, but if they had managed to remain not offside, then... I'm not convinced that they'd have actually been able to stretch out and actually stick the ball in the net. So, and Murray, let's face it, is a pass master for being offside. So,
yes, indeed,
it's almost
is.
Your default setting, isn't it?
Yeah. He wasn't happy about it, was it? But we need to talk about the tackle from Perch on Poco.
That was naughty.
That should have been a red.
A straight red, which a ref didn't even.
And not even a booking. It was disgusting. Quite frankly.
Well, even the commentators pointed out, saying, well, you know, that's a yellow, certainly borderline red, and they were astonished it didn't even get anything.
So for all Holloway's bleating about, should have had a penalty with Lewis Dunk, sort of, with the ball brushed his arm.
And we're now joined by a QPR fan, Mark Johnson,
is he going to take part? We've got to say, what we've got coming up after the Albion Roar here is Slipstream Worldwide Beats with Mark Johnson, and he's got his live show, but he is also a very much a big QPR fan. Just a quick one, mate. What was your take on the game last night?
Well, I didn't actually see the game.
That's a very Wenger type answer, that, isn't it? I didn't see it.
But I saw the result, and all I can say is I really am rooting for Brighton at the moment. So I'm glad Brighton won, to be honest. So, you know,
Expense of QPR.
Yeah, I really am. I mean, it'd be so fantastic if Brighton can get promotion. It means so much to the town, the city, and everything. So,
have you noticed that there is a certain buzz around the town?
Yeah, definitely. It's you know, everyone's glued to the other results as well. You know, the Huddersfield and Newcastle, games. So they're not only looking at our results. You know, Brighton results, but other
yeah, we're
results
Brighton.
As well.
It's where we live.
I mean, it's
he's on the turn.
Unlucky Rangers, but you know.
Have QPR got either Huddersfield or Newcastle the rest of the season?
I don't know.
No, I don't think they have.
Doesn't care.
Bad fan.
Cheers, Mark. Yeah.
Okay. Well.
Yes, should have been red.
It should have been red. Okay. Yeah. Well, it was half time, and Lewis Dunk didn't come out again, and
still Fikayo still with
Tomori,
khaki pants. Yeah.
Came in again, did perfectly well.
And had no, and bearing in mind how he played against Birmingham, was like, no,
I'm
cool with this. This is not an.
Please just don't lose anyone else.
Yeah, but basically.
It was, obviously, with those two offside decisions in the first half, there was obviously a discussion at half time because there was a lot of fantastic balls being played through the QPR back line for us to chase onto in the second half. They're obviously targeting that.
Well, for the goal, certainly for Murray's goal, there was an element of kamikaze about their defending. I mean, they tried to play an offside, but
very high up.
But the thing is, again, we nicked the ball in midfield, and it was a nice 1-2, well, a kind of a huge 1-2 rather than a sort of like a dinky little 1-2 between Murray and Hemed. I mean, Hemed was, you know, on the halfway line out wide. You think, what on earth is he doing there? But because actually, I noticed that our centre forwards were spending a lot of time out wide. Mm. But yeah, you also saw, you know, from the camera angle, you saw Murray making the run, pointing where he wanted it.
Yeah, that was
And Hemed had so much time and space to play it into. Yeah. They stepped up too late. Murray was away, and they pointed it out in the commentary, and I'm certain it happened. The Brighton fans started cheering before Murray netted it.
Really?
Yeah.
Bear in mind, our history of one-on-ones over the last years has been worse than appalling.
Absolutely. Especially with Murray is not necessarily the greatest at it. But no.
Can we bring out the aplomb finish?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah. Still a difficult finish. It's sort of it was still the right side.
And
of
Smithies
keeper,
is not a rubbish
sense.
Keeper. You fancy his chances against him, but if you can hear something horrible in the background, I'm afraid it's Morris dancers. So.
Alan's itching to join him.
Yeah, I'm really not.
I could just see you with some bells around your ankles, Al.
No, that's just my, that's just the way I walk.
And a nice, like a floral dance.
I don't think there are the words to actually describe just how much I hate Morris dancing.
You've got an irrational fear of them. I've seen you run away from Morris dances before.
No, it's just awful. I mean,
it is getting
touchy.
My God,
they're all dressed in black and everything. I thought they were all in white handkerchiefs and oh, it's. Go away.
It's pagan Morris dancers. Always.
Okay, well, let's talk about Knockhart being brought down on the edge of the box for a free kick, and there's some discussion. Talk me through this discussion.
Well, it was quite bizarre. Now, I don't think it was Knockhart was brought down, even though it was Murray then getting trod on the ball, but I think it was for the original free kick.
It was,
For the original foul. There was March was over it. They had Pocconioli over it, and you think, hang on, you're a left-back. He's never taken a free kick in your life. Go away.
Actually, he has, and he scored a few for West Brom.
Yeah, but not for a long time.
6 years or
so? First since 2010. And, well, what he said afterwards was, you know, he was asked what were they arguing about. And then, bearing in mind that Pocconioli is actually Belgian, not Italian, you have to remember that, is he said, all he said was to Knockhart, let me shoot. But all he said back to me was something in French which I couldn't understand. Mm. Which leads me to believe that possibly... That Pocconioli is actually Flemish rather than a Walloon, but it's either that or it was just done for hilarious comic effect, and I fell for it. But you can't get a better placement than that.
No, that was
you?
Inch perfect. It was literally in that little sort of corner bit, you know,
just shaved the crossbar
outside of the keeper's reach, completely sort of off the bar or post, whatever it is. Yeah. Brilliant, absolutely. Brilliant.
But we did definitely need a second, didn't we?
Oh yes. Because otherwise they'd have equalised. Mm. And you knew that threat was coming. What's his name? Matt Smith. You know, once he's finished being Doctor Who, it's just one of those things.
And they threw the kitchen sink at us as well. Yes. If anybody was from Huddersfield or Newcastle or ever watching it, thinking, as Holloway said, that people saying QPR didn't give it. They gave it a go. You know, let's be honest, that was a.
But also, I did like the way that, you know, it would have probably been infuriating if the boot was any other foot. It'd be infuriating, but we kind of managed the countdown. You know, I'm not sure that Stevens was as hurt as much as he was, and you know, if our player got fouled, they stayed down just a few seconds longer. Like I say, it drives you around the twist when you're an opposition person, but what it did was it's not so much running down the clock, but it disrupts the flow, the momentum, because there wasn't quite so much, you know, QPR getting the ball forward. Previously it was just it went to Smithies, he'd lump it forward and here we go again. So,
but it's we're getting to the end of it now. We've only another, was it five games left
to go, three wins needed to guarantee.
Marcus, what would promotion mean to you?
Everything. I mean, everything to everybody. Bearing in mind, you know, a lot of us old schoolers were there, you know, Hereford losing to Goldstone. Oh, you know, the list goes on and on and on. Gillingham for 2 years with Dean, which ended up being a successful place. I think it's our reward. Let's be honest, I'm going to balls out. It's our reward.
Can I just say, though, I think now the time is absolutely right for Brighton to go up. You know, the stadium, the way the team are playing. Everything's going right, and you know, did you go to Loftus Road? Have you seen how small the stadium is?
Yeah, I've been to Loftus Road. That's why
it's just a dreadful stadium.
Actually, I was talking about Loftus Road last night actually to someone, and basically, I mean, back in the day, I used to absolutely love Subutio when I was a kid. and do you remember,
well, season ticket holder there for about 5 years, and you know. It just hasn't changed at all.
You know, you used to get used to be pitch and you used to staple it to a bit of wood and whatever. And then you used to be able to get the advertising hoardings. And then they started doing the stadium for it as well. And it was always Loftus Road.
That or the Dell.
But you see, now I think Brighton is just absolutely perfect to go up. The stadium, everything about it.
Everything's
the training
together,
facilities. So, you know, I just wish them so much luck. And especially for you guys, talking about Premier League games in the Albion Roar.
Great. That'd be good, wouldn't it?
That'd be good, yeah. Oh, you know, we got stuffed by Stoke again, yeah. No, it's the culmination, as Mark has pointed out, it is everything. It's the culmination of what we're doing. Even with the Tillers, Goldstone, Ghosts, and one day when we're storming back a bunch of happy fans without a care.
Absolutely.
And you think, you know, how on earth did he, at the time of our darkest, you know, get to be so positive about something, albeit it's taken 20 years? Mm. And I think we all knew it was going to be the case.
Bearing in mind, we were grateful just to have a football club to support, let alone one that's on the verge of being in the top division.
Okay, well, that is it. That's all we've got time for this week. So, of course, thank you to Marcus Hancock, to Alan Ware, to Mark Johnson, who's on with Slipstream any second now, if you're listening to it on the wireless. If you're listening to the podcast, Mark's got a podcast, you can find that there.
Yeah.
But Well, I can't, there's not much I can say about this, but we're on our way.
Got a dream, boy, got a song. Bring your wagon and come along. Bring your song, come on along. Where am I going? I don't know where I'm heading. Certain all I know is I am on my way. When will I be there? I don't know. When will I get there? I ain't certain all I know is I am on my way. I say, got a dream, boy, got a song, got a song. Take your wagon and come along, come along. Where am I going? I don't know. When will I get there? I ain't certain what will I get. I ain't equipped to say, but we're on our way, on our way.
Better pack your bag, pack your kit,
cross it up your boat.
Don't know where we're going, but
jeepers, here we go. Wagon's old, we're rolling. Where am I going? I don't know. Where am I heading? I ain't certain. All I know is I am on my way. When will I be there? I don't know. When will I get there? I ain't certain. All I know is I am on my way.
On my way. Got a tree,
got a tree,
got a
tree.
Say.